Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Better Call Saul. My name is Mike, and I'm here with Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Hey, we're here for episode 7 of season 4. This one's called Problem Dog. Kelly, you run a couple websites for fun facts for Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Do you have any fun facts for Problem Dog?
I do. One first out of the gate is Peter Gould, who created Saul. He directed this episode and wrote this episode. This was his first time directing. So this should be an interesting one. And Saul is in this one, so this should be good.
So, yeah, this one starts out with Jesse playing that rage game. We haven't seen, he's done that at the party before, I think, but have we really seen it this detailed where you can tell that rage game blurring with Gale and being real is pretty real for Jesse.
Right. Yeah. And you know, he's still trying to get all those demons out of his head with those distractions.
Yeah. Right. But those distractions are not isolated from reality. They're blending, reality's blending into them, which is really kind of freaky.
Yeah, and you can see his party, you know, he's in a mess, so he's still continuing that party mode.
Well, Skyler bitch slaps Walt, makes him take that nice car back, that Junior's beautiful red Challenger. Walt doesn't really want to do that, though. He takes one little less fun drive out of it and drives the crap out of it, pretty much. Literally crashing and burning it, and then he calls a cab. Did you feel sad to see that car like that, Kelly?
I did. I can see why he would do it, and it's interesting because they had to buy 3 Challengers. Normally, they'll buy one that's water damaged. In this case, they couldn't. So they had to buy one brand new off the lot and strip it of everything that was sellable in it and then rip it up and go through about 10 pairs of tires.
Man,
that hurt a bit.
It was such a beautiful car, and just for one day of ownership, gets wasted.
Yeah.
So we see Saul now. Saul does make up for. We didn't see him at all in episode 6, but he makes up for it here because he's really in full form. Saul does deal after deal for these guys, and this one is kind of a cleanup deal. He gets Walt off with misdemeanor trash burning for a $52,000 fine or something.
Right. And, you know, here's Walt saying, well, just, you know, spare me the details. Just tell me it's done. So now Saul's not even getting his attaboy.
Yeah. So Walt was pissed because there was going to be like an $800 restocking charge for just bringing the Challenger back without anything at all, you know, one day of use of its life.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's got $52,000. He's got to pay other people off. Didn't Saul say it was something like $80,000 all done?
Yes. And when Skyler was saying go take it back, she said ask for Glenn, which, you know, you're a Walking Dead guy as from what your comments, and you know, Glenn was the one in Walking Dead that had that red Challenger as well. So,
oh, that's right. That was the exact same car, wasn't it?
Uh huh.
And Glenn only had his for like one day, and then it got taken apart.
Right.
Boy, Challengers die a hard death in this.
Yeah, they are all over New Mexico. I don't know if that's just a coincidence, but they are everywhere.
Yeah, I wonder if I guess Chrysler. Dodge Chrysler must have had some sort of deal with Breaking Bad with Gilligan. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, actually, the Breaking Bad had to actually buy the car, but they give them a courtesy fee, which is a large sum of money. But Vince Gilligan has said that he doesn't put any product in Breaking Bad that isn't for the story, that he actually wanted the Challenger. That's how those products.
Skyler has that Jeep, which I think was once owned. AMC Jeep was once owned by Chrysler, if it still isn't. And then Walt has the 300 later on.
Yeah, Dodge gets into a lot of stuff. They're in Walking Dead. I noticed it in a lot of shows.
So back to Saul here. We're in Saul's office. And Saul is their bank, too, because he has all the money in his safe.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting, too. I didn't really catch that so much the first time through, but they don't use banks. They have Saul's safe as their bank.
So exactly.
They really rely on Saul for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they couldn't get away with half the stuff without Saul. That's why he's such a, such a perfect character.
Yeah, so Walt's really starting to feel cornered by Gus now. And he wants Saul to help ameliorate the situation with Gus, which essentially means he wants to hit Gus, to kill him, and he wants Saul to help him find someone. And Saul brings up a really important point that he might find someone, but Mike knows everyone that Saul is going to know. So Saul, there's no way that they can get to Gus with a hitman without Mike knowing about it.
Exactly. Mike's so connected.
And Saul does offer the advice that maybe you can't get near Gus, but Jesse might be able to. And maybe that sits with Walt a little bit more than it would have if he hadn't said it. So Saul, you know, he doesn't just offer legal advice. He's just kind of a smart dude that offers, I would call this criminal advice, but I think it's good advice that he kind of turns Walt onto this other idea.
He does. He can be a voice of reason. And sometimes when Walt's not thinking straight, he can come up with some really good ideas.
Absolutely. I mean, he's funny. He's smart. He's a bad dude. He's a lawyer, and he's just a total entertainer. I don't know how they figured out how to put him in this show, but he adds like so much to it.
Yeah, he's absolutely wonderful, and I'm really excited for the new show.
So next we see Jesse fixing up the party house. He's evidently turned a corner. He's gone through withdrawal from the drugs. He's painting over the graffiti in the house, and he's kind of cleaning up his act now. And he admits he's seen Gus. Walt goes over to talk to him. Walt's figured it out that Gus is trying to isolate them.
And right. Also, when he sees Gus, Gus is giving him compliments. Like, I see something in you. And everything that Jesse needs, because he's definitely missing a father figure, which I think maybe Walt was in the beginning. But now Gus is really knowing how to push his buttons.
But Walt is pushing his buttons here, too, because he uses a heavy psych out on Jesse. Like, is it possible that he thinks you're weak-willed? And he knows that's going to get Jesse riled up.
Right.
And Jesse says, yeah, that might be. So, you know, Jesse's ready to kill Gus because of this conversation he has with Walt. Basically because of what we just discovered, that Saul turned Walt onto this idea.
Right. I like how Jesse will put Walt in his place and say, quit with the sales pitch. He said that a few times in the series. You know, quit yanking my chain. Just tell me what you really want.
Yeah, he's getting smarter by the episode.
Mm-hmm.
We see Marie at the car wash. She wants to do a grand party opening, probably all purple, if she has her say. And Hank's doing better, and she delivers that news. Now, Walt shows up with a soda pop cache, the cache in the soda cases. It's the first time we've seen this, isn't it, Kelly? I don't remember it before.
No, this is his new way, I guess, of getting this into the car wash.
Yeah, pretty smart, too. It's like no one would ever think to look in the center of a couple cases of soda.
Right.
Skylar's bragging about $3,800 in car wash receipts from the day before, but Walt walks in with $274,000. And that's too much for Skylar. She's freaked out because she's not going to be able to launder it, right?
Right. I like how Walt's just kind of like he did with Saul. Like, I don't want to hear the ins and outs. You said you could do this. Just do it. He doesn't want to be bothered with the details.
Yeah. And these numbers are pretty strong evidence of Walt really breaking bad, because if we remember, he wanted $757,000 in order to get what he needed and then get out. But now he's going to bring $274,000 every 2 weeks. that was the $7.5 million a year that he's going to get from Gus's operation.
Yeah, well, that whole I am the one who knocks speech, he's telling her, you know, a whole, I don't know what the exact wording is, but it could go belly up without me. He's in very deep. This operation is just off the scale from what she's prepared for.
So now this money, Kelly, this isn't after it's been laundered, right? This is just raw money, like his payroll from Gus, right?
Yep, he's just rolling it in, literally, and asking her to kind of take care of it. But now she's even like, we can't pay with 50s, and getting down to the real details that's her personality. And he's just like, well, take care of it. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but that's bad. That's stupid of Walt, because you can't. What do you expect her to do?
Right, exactly.
It's all in 50s. You can't take that to a bank, obviously, and deposit it. You do need a guy like Saul to, even if you had to pay 17%, it would be worth it if it was effective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, 25, what's 17%? 25, be about 30 or 40,000 out of every 274,000. That'd be worth it to get it cleaned, you know, to make it valid money that you could spend.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's overwhelming Skylar for sure. So now Walt's cooking under the cameras, and he takes a break to cook up some more ricin. This made me realize that the first ricin that they had got tossed away with Tuco's burrito. Remember that? I kind of forgot that. I thought this.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
They had to make ricin twice, and this reminded me of that. That Tuco, Tio wiped it off the table when they're trying to poison Tuco. But they had the second batch of ricin, and Walt cooks this up in the lab in the break room. Because Gus didn't have cameras in the break room. That seemed kind of a slip up.
Right, yeah. And every time he moves, that camera just whirs along with him. It's just got to be graining on him, just that control that he has over him.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
He's cooking that ricin up, you know, under his watchful eye.
Now, ricin, Kelly, is the perfect murder weapon. If it makes it only look like you've had a heart attack or you get a really bad fever and a flu and you die after 5 days or whatever, it's a perfect weapon. The only problem is the delivery of it.
Right, yeah. But, you know, you could put that in coffee. You could put that, well, you know, as we've seen later, you can put that in a lot of things that people wouldn't suspect.
Yeah, and Walt expects Jesse to become this hitman, the de facto hitman, and I guess the one to deliver the ricin. And I really liked seeing Mike and Jesse together, Kelly, but I'm really glad that Jesse was still on Walt's side at this point.
Me too, right. I always want Jesse and Walt together. I'm always just in love with those two. I hate it when they're against each other.
Yeah, all the way to the end. It was mm-hmm. great. So next we see Hank and Junior, of all people, going to Pollo's for lunch, and they limp up. Of course, Junior's got his braces, and Hank's got his walker.
Yeah.
They even make a comment about that, don't they?
Yeah, they say, look at the pair of us, or we make a great pair or something.
Junior tells Hank all about his new car, but Hank's working on his detective skills with Junior. He's working him over. And then Gus meets them and offers to buy them lunch and a job to Junior, and he's super nice. But Hank proves his detective skills here, because do you think the only reason he was in there for lunch was to get those fingerprints?
Yeah.
He gets a refill, and he gets the fingerprints from the cup that Gus handles. Pretty smart, pretty damn smart of Hank, I thought, to do that.
Yeah, it is. And he mentions, and I don't know what other episode, but when he's talking to RJ or to Walt Jr., he says, "You flew too close to the sun." And that quote was used in another episode as well. So we'll have to keep our ears out for that.
Oh, yeah, the Icarus, right? Daedalus and Icarus, the Greek fable about one, they have the wings and one flies too low, so gravity pulls them to the ground. But Icarus, I think, is the one that flies too high and it melts the wax and he crashes because his wings melt off of him. Flies too close to the sun. Yeah, that's a great point. But I thought this whole scene with Hank getting the fingerprints was really interesting right after the ricin scene. Because it just made me think of, like, where does Gus take, where does he eat? Where is he going to get rice? And does anyone ever get to his food or his drinks? But here he's handling a drink that Hank trusts him to bring back without any harm. And it's all about fingerprints, but it's kind of an interesting thing to see right after that ricin.
Yeah, very genius. Hank is a smart guy. I mean, he's been on the trail. I think he can also be underestimated.
So I thought more about this at the chicken ranch. We see Mike and Jesse at the chicken ranch. Gus is having another meeting. And my whole thing I thought about was, how is Jesse going to get the ricin to Gus? He has a couple chances to poison him, but he can't pull the trigger. One, especially with the coffee. Jesse's tasked with making the coffee, but he doesn't do it when it looks like he could have gotten away with it. What do you think there, Kelly? Is it too many people might drink that coffee, or Gus might not drink any of it?
Yes, I think it was the casualties would be too large, because we didn't know that it was just going to be this one guy showing up. You know, we're thinking the whole cartel. And either way, Jesse's just not a killer. I mean, he just is getting through Gale. I doubt he'd want to poison. Maybe Mike even might drink some.
Yeah, because even Gus thought the whole crew of cartel were coming,
mm-hmm.
not just this gaff guy. But right. It's funny because it turns out that Gus is the only one that drinks the coffee. I don't think Mike drank any of it. I think it was just Gus.
Oh.
But Mike gives a gun to Jesse, which is also very interesting. Like, he really does trust Jesse to have a gun. I thought that was cool. But then Gaff shows up, and Gus orders $50 million. His deal's $50 million. Let it all go. Business concluded. We're done. And Gaff shuts it down, just declines, and he reoffers Gus a counter. And I guess his yes or no, he wants a yes or no to the bucket message, the thing written on that bucket lid, which is, are you ready to talk? Doesn't really offer what the details are, just are you ready to talk?
Right, exactly. And it's just a odd situation, but you know the cartel is not going to say, okay, we'll take your 50 million, thanks, have a nice day. They are not going to fold that easily.
Yeah, it just shows us how much that meth must be worth to the cartel.
Yeah, they want their fingers in it no matter what.
So Gaff leaves this meeting, and as they're all breaking up, Jesse gives the gun back to Mike. And Mike wants to teach him how to shoot now. Mike's really bringing him along as a friend/mentor/father figure.
Yeah, he's like, I think we better teach you how to shoot. And, you know, then you've got Jesse saying, well, this is all fine and well, but what are we really doing here? And here's that line that I'd mentioned a few episodes ago that he said, your loyalty, that's what Gus is attracted to, but it's just probably to the wrong guy.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. So next we see Jesse outside the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. He's kind of handling the rice and kind of wondering, am I really doing the right thing here? I think that's what he's thinking anyway.
Yeah.
But he gets into the meeting and he reveals everything. He reveals killing Gale, although he doesn't say that Gale was human. He calls it a problem dog that he once had.
Right, hence the title.
Yeah, he had to put down a problem dog. And then they criticize him. The people in the meeting criticize him, which I guess is kind of against the tenets of these NA meetings. You're not supposed to judge other people.
Yeah, no crosstalk. Yeah, and I mean, how gutsy of him. That one guy looks like a big, you know, biker dude. And he's just like, I made you my bitch. You were nothing but customers.
Yeah, he admits that he's there to sell them drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty bold stuff to admit there. That was a very strong scene, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
So next we see Hank and Merkert, Hank's boss, Merkert, and Gomi. Gomi's there, too. And Gomi's been promoted to G14, which is, I guess, enough to get him to El Paso and be the agent in charge or agent assistant in charge of El Paso.
Yeah, now that now that Hank gave it up, you know, Gomez is in the big seat now.
Can't blame Gomez for that. He's just doing whatever best for his career. Hank's still his friend, but you can't step away from that.
Right.
And they've determined now that Gale was Heisenberg's cook, not Heisenberg, which was a pretty important thing, I think, for them to understand.
Yeah.
And then we see the whole scribblings on the napkin had the Madrigal electromotive. We start to hear about this Madrigal electromotive and how the part number was a part number for an air filtration system that Madrigal produced, and Gale was sourcing that for Gus's lab. Now, Madrigal electromotive was a really big unexplained mystery for me, left at the close of the whole season, not the season, but the whole series of episodes. Madrigal seemed like it could have been more developed.
I agree. I know that they didn't really want to get too far into it because it was more, you know, the catch or the chase between the all of these characters. But for what I could gather, it was just a company in Germany that they were getting the air conditioning unit from.
Yeah, but they owned. Well, we'll see. They owned a bunch of stuff that seemed really weird for them to own. I'm actually hoping that this comes out in the Better Call Saul series, that we learn a little bit more about Madrigal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't go real into detail. I agree with you there.
Do you remember, Kelly, did you trust Merkert when you first saw this scene and met Merkert and all this for the first time?
Merkert has been, he's been in episodes prior to when Hank gave up the job and stuff. You're talking about the gray-haired guy?
Yeah, the guy in Sons of Anarchy and, Merkert, the boss.
Yeah, he's been hounding Hank to take this job and ignoring his calls, and here Hank comes with this doozy of files and information and, you know, literally points his walker at Gustavo on the wall in the picture, and he's just like, well, really? You really think so? This guy's a friend of the police.
Right. So. But I used to listen to some fan casts and other podcasts at the time of this season four, and you know, all the way through the series, and Merkert being on the take or being dirty was one of the themes everybody kind of batted around at the time.
I never took that into consideration. I always thought he was pretty stand up. He didn't give me any reason to feel like he was dirty. You got to tread carefully when you have somebody like Gustavo who's doing charities and he's a really upstanding citizen, and you have somebody pointing the finger at him. You can't really go with your guns blazing of accusations, but I never saw him doing anything that seemed untrustworthy.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Merkert had to be a bit of a politician as well as just being a leader of detectives and cops. He served a political role in there. But they talk about now how Madrigal actually owns part of Pollos Hermanos. We learn later on in the series, they own some food stores, food restaurants, and Pollos is one of those. But Merkert doubts this whole theory that they're somehow connected and doesn't seem to make sense. And even Gomi's shaking his head like, come on, Hank, you're reaching a little bit. But then Hank drops the fingerprint bomb. How did Gus's prints get at Gail's apartment? Hank just proved right there that he's a rock-solid detective. If anybody had any doubts... He may be crippled now, he may be slowed physically, but he's sharp as a tack.
Absolutely. You know, he had this, because I like that he says, yeah, you're right, I should be wearing a tin foil hat on my head. But guess what? What's Gus's prince doing in Gail Bedecker's apartment?
Exactly.
When Gus went to go visit Gail was to ask how long it would take for him to be able to take over this whole operation. So that was a misstep.
Yeah, multiple skills by Hank here. He's a good detective, and he's a great speaker. He's mm-hmm. a storyteller. He presented this case almost like he's an attorney. He presented this case perfectly to these two guys.
He did.
He set them up and then pulled the rug out perfectly.
Right, he did. It was great.
So that's it, Kelly. Episode 7, Problem Dog. I guess we find Problem Dog in the little tale that Jesse relates to the NA people. I don't remember it other places, do you?
Let's see. Where would he be a problem dog? Yeah, I guess that would be about it.
It's probably in there somewhere. We gotta sharpen our dual meanings of the titles next few episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, problem dog. And that's it for episode 7 of season 4. Our next coverage will be episode 8 is Hermanos. I think Hermanos was my favorite episode of season 4.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, so that's it. We're West Coast Project. This is our podcast for Better Call Saul. If you want to tweet us, my Twitter is @scathingtweets. Kelly, what's your Twitter?
BRBA_funfacts.
And how about your websites?
Breaking Bad Fun Facts and Better Call Saul Fun Facts on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay, great. And all those links are on our web show notes, so just look in the podcast and you'll find them and click away. All right, Kelly, till next time, I'll talk to you when we do episode 8, Hermanos.
Sounds good.
All right, bye for now.
Bye-bye.